turkey basters, we can just let it rip. So, what I wanted to talk a little bit tonight, some of the thoughts that have been rattling around my head the last few weeks and some of what I've been doing. I enjoy language and words and really look to them and about how they help us perceive the world. And I'm always taken by that Bible verse in John where it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And, you know, we all know and agree that God is love. And I wonder, you know, why there's so few words for love. It's so limited in English, especially, for our ability to name love. Well, yeah, there's a few words, you know, but that's not English. That's a whole other language. And we'll talk about that, Ruth, just a second. And, you know, Dr. Wayne Dyer, he's got that book, You'll See It When You Believe It. And it's kind of like, how are we supposed to believe something if we can't name it? And how can we see it if we can't name it? So our perception is really largely limited to the words we have available. Like, you know, everybody knows that story about the Eskimos and how they have 17,000 different words for snow. And most of us, when we look out there, we have one word for snow. It's snow. And that's about as defined as our world is regarding snow. It seems like if we have just one word for love, it seems like we must be missing a lot. So I went to the internet and I wanted to see in other cultures what they had to say about love and what kind of words were available. And so I found a little surfy thing here, I love you, and it's got language names and descriptions, and then it's got some words. So let me just summarize some of this for you. In Korean, they have 16 different words, including the one that kind of means I like you in a romantic way, and then they have one for a man and woman in a casual relationship. In Arabic, they have 15 different words. Kind of weird here. They have one for male to female, one for female to male, one for male or female to two males or two females, one for males or females to more than two males. It goes on like that. Very okay. And Chinese. Hey, Chinese. They have 8 words. Dutch and Greek both have 7. Japanese, I like this one. They have 13 different words, including one that they use. It said, for the first time, like for a start, when you're not yet real lovers. That's a handy word. Hungarian. Hungarian, they have a word that means, it's you I love and no one else. And I know about those Hungarian girls, and that's a word they need to hear. Macedonian. They have a word meaning something along the lines of a little bit stronger than I love you, whatever that would be. Now, even in Klingon, in Star Trek, they have 2 different words for love, depending upon which galaxy you're in. In English, they had 3 different words or expressions listed for love. They had, I love you, I adore you, and they had, I love thee. And then they had in parentheses, used only in Christian context. Well, I don't know what that means exactly, but it sounds like basically we've got, you know, love and adore, love and adore. So we've got pretty much just one word to express a veritable plethora of experience. Now I want to tell you a little bit about a road trip that I took over the 4th. I had a little time, and I wanted to visit all of my friends along the way that I could, so I visited up in L.A. An ex-lesbian housemate of mine that I've had just a wonderful infatuation with for years, and she broke my heart, but she did move into my house, so that was as close as I could get there. Hey, Millie's not here. I can let her.
Sorry. So when the roommate or ex was the lesbian?
Roommate.
Oh. And I saw a Z.
It did be a Z.
And I love it.
Yeah.
I saw a Z.
There really aren't any new people here, right? You know, Barbara was right. I don't have a whole lot more to share, but really what's there, and I just got to lay it out. So anyway, I saw this road trip. The next person I visited was actually an old boss that I just hated, and his wife, who's a good friend of mine, who used to hate him too. She married him. I've got a friend who's an older guy. He's 70. He's 20 years older than I, and we've known each other for a good little while now. And he's like a father to me, and I just adore the way he, you know, wisely walks through life, and just love the man. I spent a lot of time with him and done a lot of things together. I visited a person that I probably could use that Japanese word for the meaning the first time, like when you're not yet real lovers. But probably close enough for talking to Reverend Millie about getting a lecture from her. So there's lots of different kinds and shades of love. And I think the lack of vocabulary suggests we don't have the ability to really perceive and appreciate certain aspects and subtleties of love, or to recognize the validity of certain expressions of love. And linguists and metaphysicians, they kind of indicate that, you know, maybe we can't fully experience love, and we can't see it, and we can't name it, kind of like the electromagnetic spectrum. You know, we can only see a little narrow band of it. And there's a whole lot to it that we know is out there and kind of exists, but as far as experientially and as far as most of us can actually talk about and know, it's a very little thin band. And you know what? Maybe not just with love, but maybe also it's the same with God. We can't see and experience, or, you know, and most of us really have basically like one word for God. And so maybe we can't even really believe and comprehend all of the different aspects of God. Because after all, God is love. We're talking about the same thing. And as spiritualists, we're kind of admonished and called to somehow practice love every minute. Somehow we're supposed to do that. Now, how are we supposed to do that when we have such a limited vocabulary and actually a limited perception of love? And how do we relate to love? You know, in our circles, our spiritual circles, you know, many times we'll all be in there, we'll all agree that we can't put into words what we've experienced and felt and the miracle and the mystery of what's happened. We just can't put it into words. And also, Spirit tells us in classes, and Spirit has told Millie that, you know, they would like to tell us more, but, you know, because we're so immature, we're like children, and we don't have the vocabulary and the understanding to understand what they're talking about. So they can't really tell us more. And what they do tell us, they have to really dumb down. That's what we know. So it occurs to me that finding new words is actually the beginning of letting go of old ideas and opening up to new ones. And as I've talked about before, everybody knows that I've been practicing a 12-step program for a lot of years. And one of their main admonitions, their main things that they kind of let you know right from the start is that you're going to have to let go of all of your old ideas. Absolutely. And one of the ways you do that, of course, is working the steps. And a couple of weeks ago, I was in a group. We were studying step 6, which is the one about becoming entirely ready to have God remove all of your defects of character. And, you know, that's the hardest step there is, if you want my opinion. Now, alcoholism is a lot of things, but really what it is a disease of perception. I'm not going to be able to elaborate a whole lot on that, but what happens in AA is it allows for seeing and the believing of what previously you couldn't see, you couldn't perceive. That's where the word denial comes from. You're wandering around in denial. You can't see it. You can't perceive it. Other people can, but you can't. And as you work the program, you know, the blinds begin to drop off your eyes and you begin to realize things. And you begin to get a vocabulary for what the truth is. So when I did my fourth step, I worked with my sponsor, did a fourth step, and it's kind of designed to help you identify character defects, is what they call them, things that kind of get in your way and keep you from being of maximum service to God and to others, and that tend to keep you drunk, quite honestly. So what I think of those as is you need to spend the time and work the fourth step and review it with a sponsor, and actually what you end up getting is the ability to name your evil. You got to name your evil fully before you can go and become entirely ready to have God remove it. Now, this business about becoming entirely ready, it's not just simply naming your evil, but you have to become really intimately familiar with your particular challenge. With the defects. You have to really know the damage that it does to yourself and the damage that it causes others and the hurt, and you have to be able to really get to the point where you can, you know, you have empathy and an inner understanding of just exactly what this is. You have to really get close and up close and personal with this aspect of yourself and look at it from every angle. And there's people in the program that help you do it, whether you want to or not. That's the beauty of the program. So, you know, one of the big values that I came up with is that my sponsor saw, I didn't see it right away, didn't see it for a long time, still have trouble seeing it, is false pride. I have my false pride. And then he suggested, and I didn't see it, you know, but he suggested that I didn't really want to accept life on life's terms. You know, I just kind of, there are things where I think I know better than God. God kind of screwed up, and he didn't consult me. And I know, a little grandiose of me, but you know, that's where I was at. And so, we have to get thoroughly convinced and pretty much disgusted with our flaws. And then we have to become, and I'll use a kind of a Christian term, but we have to become repentant before God actually will work his magic and actually swoop down and remove that character defect from you and liberate you. Now, doing all that stuff takes a while sometimes, especially if it's a favorite kind of defect. So, the program and the sponsor, and especially the one, the ninth step, which is the ones where you actually have to go out to the person that you've harmed and make amends. And that tends to make you a little bit repentant, and it tends to bring empathy to you a lot. And it's really unpleasant to have to do that too many times, especially on the same issues. And so you begin to really become mindful of what you're doing and how that, you know, character trait is playing in your relationships with others, and you remember, oh yeah, I don't want to have to go and make amends for the 16th time on the same problem. So you begin to grow slowly like that. And quite honestly, you know, you begin to let go of your old ideas, but it's a spiritual experience of God removing your defects, more of an educational variety rather than a reaching down and liberating you kind of a thing. Now, on my road trip, I actually had more of a burning bush experience. Hi, guys. It kind of, you know, cracked my shell of limited understanding and instantaneously revealed meaning of words I thought I knew. And like Barbara reminded everybody, I did have a birthday, and I turned 50. And for a few, everybody knows. We don't have to comment on it. We don't have to ruminate over it. But, and I've been trying to, for a few years, kind of come to terms with aging and, my eyes going bad and wearing glasses. And, I really, quite honestly, most of the time would rather go home at night and sleep than stay out. And, I'd rather at this point let the younger people do the labor and, young girls, I can be standing right in front of them. They look right through me. They don't even see me. Didn't used to be that way.
And, on my birthday, I took the news pretty well, I thought. And my friends were ribbing and the belly dancer, I thought I took all this stuff as graciously as a man with false pride could. So I'm driving home. I'm driving home from my trip and had a nice time and got sunburned and all that stuff. And I stopped in Buellton for a cup of coffee at a McDonald's for, I guess it was 8:30 or so in the evening. And I walked in and asked for this cup of coffee, and this little twit, she says without missing a beat, one coffee to go with senior discount, that would be $6. you laughed. Well, let me tell you, my world collapsed, and I knew that life as I knew it was over. These words shot through my brain. They cracked my denial, the perception of who and what I am. My pride recoiled. My brain said, no, this is unacceptable. Life, and this little trick, can't do this thing. My awareness was closing around me as the understanding of this really instantly exploded in my brain. But at the same exact moment, I've got this cognitive dissonance thing going on. I'm sitting there, I'm confused with confusion about what is presented to me. I'm thinking, senior discount. Who is she talking to? Is this the old Jesus here or what? And then I'm thinking 6% sounds good. I didn't know how to respond to this. My consciousness was all scrambled. Just scrambled. Anyway, so I got a new glimpse and a new understanding of what it means to be old. I thought I kind of had an idea of what old meant, but now I really was experiencing old. I was seeing the assumptions that other people make about it, and I was experiencing the actual image that I portray to the outside world. It's not a pretty thought. So my denial of the demise of my youth was shattered. And to add insult to injury, if my prior history of learning anything about myself is true and is active, I'm probably the last to realize this great truth. So, there are some words, there's some vocabulary and some words that I really don't want to learn at all. And one of them is senior discount. Yet, I started off the talk talking about how I enjoy language and words. And, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. And I really do want to grow and experience and get to know the name of all the aspects of love and of God. And God knows I want to do it while I'm still young enough to enjoy it. So, with that, I'll wish you a good evening. Thank you for listening.
When I saw he was older than me, I didn't know it was going to be such a sore subject. I'm well 39 too. So we do have somebody here for the first time. Okay. Do you want to give her a name, sir? Let's see. Sunday Church. I don't know who's speaking at Sunday Church. Rita. Okay. Rita is wonderful. Most of you have heard her speak before. I do have some news in case you didn't get the news. Reverend Alvina Davis made her transition this past weekend. And certainly Ken, her precious husband, who's in his 90s, needs all of our prayers right now. Fortunately, they both know and believe what we believe. And I'm sure she's walking very close with him. But he needs lots of prayers. So, and if anybody, I do have his address, so if anybody wants to send him a card, I can get you that address. Next week here, it's me. So I'll talk about turning 48 since Ben talked about turning 50. Like I said, I'm not that far behind. And I'll try and make it as funny as he did. But I get called grandma. When I'm out with my girls, people say, oh, my beautiful granddaughters, and I want to hit them. You know, I mean, do I look like a grandma? But anyway, a few more trips to the hairdresser, the gray will be gone. Okay, so every Wednesday night we do meet here at 6:30 for the healing. That goes until 7:30. The service starts at 7:30. And as you know, we have a great time once we're here. And Neely will be back next week. And that's it, unless anybody else has any other announcements, and then we'll do the offering. Okay?
You know, Jared, you could, but you...
What?
Yeah, I know, but...